and thank you to everybody who's joining tonight. Hopefully some of you were with us last week in the first part of this two-part series, Conservative Outreach, Conservative Messaging 2. As Ricky mentioned, this part is more focused on practice. So last week we spent most of our time talking about sort of the theory behind conservative messaging, what some of the things that resonate with conservative audiences, some of the priorities that conservatives would have. And this week, we're going to try to put that to work in our practice and workshop. Just one note, this is the first time we're doing this, but we plan to repeat this several times throughout the year, probably 3 to 4 times, so that we keep the content fresh, so that we keep it in people's minds. Keep your eye out for future versions of this. So we did a lot in the first session, 101. This long list of red bullet points are basically takeaways that we had. I'm not going to go through this now, but basically we've taken this and integrated it throughout the rest of this presentation tonight. So we're going to take what we learned in 101 and apply it tonight. As we talked about in 101, same goals. So the goals for these lessons are to improve your skills at engaging conservative audiences, to recruit more conservatives for CCL. Once we have conservative folks join the organization, we want to make sure that we retain them and make CCL a welcome place for them. And again, just a note, I don't want anybody to pretend to be something that you're not. We're not asking you that for sure. We really just want to make sure that people, regardless of where you put yourself politically, are sensitive to what what others might hear in a situation, and in particular for this lesson, conservative audiences, because climate change has become a divisive issue for so many folks. So the 201 agenda tonight, what we're going to talk about first is how do we become a trusted messenger, and what does that even mean? Messaging do's and don'ts, and we'll talk about a few different themes of that. CCL's conservative street cred. What are some of the things that we can offer up to show what conservative credentials we have as an organization? And CCL community tools, some tools that you can look at after this. So becoming a trusted messenger, one of the things we took away from last week is that first impressions matter. And so I'm going to start off with this and ask, what do these three gentlemen have in common, right? You might say not a heck of a lot. But the one thing is that they are all trusted messengers, at least to some segments of the population. And so the people that are followers of each one of these presidents give a lot of deference to what they say. And in essence, messenger trumps message. So being a trusted messenger is very powerful. And to put it another way, this was a message sent from a local Republican club president to a CCL volunteer. He said, I very much respect what you're doing, and more so you, and actually agree with most of your mission. I'm always sure of your integrity, which alone sways me where I'm not sure about your proposal. You know, I'm always willing to help you. So basically what he's saying here is, I'm still not 100% sure. I agree with the carbon fee. I'm not sure if that's the right approach or not, but I really trust you and your integrity, and that gives me a lot of, assurance about it. So I'd like to introduce you all to Jennifer. Jennifer is a lady that you just met. She's very friendly, and she's a conservative. And in her mind, before you have a conversation, kind of what's baked into her mind is she's thinking, if you were to ask her about climate change, she'd say, well, I don't think it's that important. More taxes are bad for the economy and jobs, and I don't want the government telling me what to do, right? This is a conservative and not atypical of some conservative mindset. So how are you going to become a trusted messenger for Jennifer? How are we going to start the climate change conversation? Now, for those who saw this skit, the hope is that this doesn't become the awkward Thanksgiving dinner, right? We don't want it to turn into that. We want to make sure it's a productive conversation. So how do we show Jennifer that we're a trusted messenger for her? So first of all, be confident. I have the vision that I have in my mind when I'm going through this presentation is, the first time, you walk into, say, a Republican club meeting in your local town, and maybe you're trying to go do outreach for CCL. And it can be intimidating if you haven't been in that situation before. So I would say, or even if you're not in a situation like that, you're just talking to somebody on the street and, they happen to be a conservative. But what I would recommend is just be confident. Really, you're there to make a friend before anything. You're not trying to sell anybody on an idea. You're not trying to convince them of anything. You're really just trying to make a friend. And there's about a 50% chance, as we learned last week, that she supports climate action, right? Because about 50% of conservatives are in the, per the Yale climate study maps, they're either alarmed, concerned, alarmed, or whatever the other category is, it just escaped me. But basically, there's about 50% of the folks in the conservative side who are concerned. And be credible. Look presentable. Mention that you're a volunteer, right? I mean, that adds credibility. I'm not here because somebody's paying me to be here. I'm here because I'm here on my own free will. And avoid alarmism and hyperbole. We don't want to be alarmist. That tends to shut people down. Be relatable. Mention your conservative credentials if you have any. Describe why you're a volunteer, especially if it's something that's relatable, right? Like if you care about creation care or flooding in your town, or if you're pro-life and you know you look at this as a life issue. If you are pro-business and you're concerned about the impact of business, seek common ground. And really, we don't want to lead with data. We really want to avoid science and data altogether if we can on the climate science front, unless somebody really wants to talk about it in a genuine way. Generally, that just tends to lead to long conversations that usually don't go anywhere. So we want to try to avoid that. Also, be responsive. For those of you who have been in CCL for a while, you're probably aware of the Move Over Misconception effort. And really, that's an effort to practice our listening skills. And one of the things we always say there is listen for values, right? So we're not trying to sell Jennifer on anything until she asks. But really, we don't want to just listen to what she says. We want to listen to the values behind what she's saying. So read between the lines, in other words. So when we meet Jennifer, how are we going to present ourselves? What are the things that she will and won't identify with? Well, I would recommend there's different ways to frame the same situation, right? So when we describe ourselves, if we describe ourselves as climate activists and we use words like climate crisis or save the planet, talk about all the doom and gloom, climate justice, environmentalists, all of these words just tend to have connotations with them that probably won't identify with Jennifer. She'll look and, you know, she might still be very friendly with you and say that, but she probably will say, this person probably doesn't share my worldview. But if instead you use words like we're citizen advocates, that we have a challenge of climate change, we're managing climate risks, we're concerned about the economy, businesses, farms, infrastructure, defense, et cetera. We're advocating for solutions. We want to protect quality of life for Americans, conservationist stewardship, preserve resources, and sensible solutions. These are the types of terms that will probably resonate more with a conservative audience. So what we're going to do first is we're going to practice our introduction. So you walk, let's scenario plan that. Let's say you meet Jennifer at a local Republican club meeting, right? So I'm going to go reach out for CCL. I want to make a connection here. Let me go to the next meeting. How are you going to introduce yourself? Well, some of the takeaways from the last lesson were, again, first impressions matter, so we want to make sure we try to get this right. And so my sample introduction is here. This is how I usually introduce myself to somebody who, you know, where I'm reaching out. I'll say something like, in my case, this is my case. So I say, you know, I was with ExxonMobil for 8 years, but resigned about a year ago. And now I'm working full-time with Congress as an advocate for a market-based climate and energy policy. Now, again, we said don't lead with science or data. I didn't put any science or alarmism in there about the science. One of the things we talked about last week was tackle solution aversion. And again, what that basically means is that if you look at a lot of the conservative skepticism on climate action, it comes down to a concern about, if we're going to act on climate change, what does that actually mean? Does that mean that we're going to hurt the economy? Does that mean that I have to give up my car? Does that mean I have to turn my air conditioning off or my energy price is going to go up? People are concerned about that. So it's a lot of times when people throw up concern about climate change, in some ways it's a smokescreen. And really what's behind it is a concern about, if I accept that climate change is a real risk, what am I signing up for? What do I have to give up in exchange for that? So when we use the word like market-based in my introduction, it gives the impression or it tells the person that, look, I am concerned about the economy too. This isn't a one-sided argument. We need to be balanced about this. Reference trusted validators, right? That's another thing we want to do. So in my case, I happen to work at Exxon, which in a place like Houston is actually, you know, will go over very well. Now, there's other parts of the country that might not go over so well. But in most conservative circles, if you have something, you know, in your life that you think will resonate with the person, use that and throw it out there. And finally, recognize competing priorities. Avoid hyperbole. So again, we don't want to be alarmist. And on the competing priorities, we have to recognize that even if somebody, even if Jennifer, in this case, is concerned about climate change, she probably doesn't think it's the highest priority. You know, it's somewhere down the list. There's other things that are higher priority. And so when I say climate and energy policy, what I'm really saying there again is, yes, I understand the need to act on climate, but I also understand the need to do it in a way that, you know, respects that we need energy and energy is important. So here's where we're going to go to a workshop, and we're going to workshop your introduction. So what I'm going to put up on the screen here are, again, the takeaways from 101. And then I've got some messaging ideas on the right that you can read through, talking about things like we want to kickstart America's economy. We want alternatives to regulations. We want to care for God's creation. These are all the types of phrases that would probably go over well with somebody. And so, Ricky, I'm going to turn over to you for a minute to set us up for our breakout, our first breakout.
Okay, great. Thanks, Peter. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, great. So what we're going to do here is you're going to pretend like you're just now meeting. Or can you hear me? Okay, good. You're going to pretend like you're just now meeting Jennifer at the coffee shop or wherever you may run into her. And what we're going to do is we're going to break out into pairs. You're going to have about 3 minutes. And why don't we say that the person who lives closer to New York City goes first. So when you get in your group, in your little breakout rooms, you'll tell each other where you're from, introduce yourself to each other where you're from, and then you'll figure out who's the closest to New York City, and that person will go first. And just practice how you might use some of the words, the key phrases that Peter has mentioned here to make an introduction to someone who, again, you know, may be on the fence about climate change, but you definitely know that they're a conservative person. And so try those words, okay? And then what we'll do is we'll do that for about 3 minutes. You guys can talk about it a little bit as well if you run out of time, critique it a little bit. And then if you, what we'll do is we'll take that break, we'll come back to the group, and we'll ask one or two people to share something that they thought was particularly effective, okay? Looks like everyone is back. All right, so were there any success stories? We had some problems in some room, and I apologize for that, and we'll check with Zoom. Were there people who were able to share and get into one-on-ones and share practice?
Yeah. Yes, this is Claudia in St. Paul, and Eric from Massachusetts, and I had a great time.
Okay, great. Did you want to maybe share, Claudia, what your introduction would have been? You don't have
to. I took the position that that Jennifer, our imaginary Jennifer, had asked me a little bit about myself.
Yes.
So I said that I grew up in a Republican household in Wisconsin, where my father was a locally elected official, and he was very concerned about stewardship of our land and our water. And I had that concern, because that's true, I do. And based upon that concern, I was interested in a blah, 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 market-based blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Very good. So you establish that connection. And that's what Dr. Hayhoe teaches us a lot as well, or she speaks to almost all the time. In fact, I watched a little video of her today, and you know, she's again talking about don't lead with science and lead with a connection with people. And I think, Claudia, what you did there was perfect. But leading that connection based on something that you think may appeal more to a conservative a person. So that's fantastic. So I think Peter is back now.
All right. So for those of you who were successful, we just made our pitch to Jennifer, and you know, there's been a chance that she'll say, okay, you know, maybe there's we share somewhat of a worldview. As was just mentioned, you know, you're related. I think you said somebody in your family is Republican. But maybe they heard the word climate, and so she's going to throw out an objection, right? She has kind of a knee-jerk reaction. So the next part of this is accepting the objection and pivoting. How do we frame our message? And of course, framing is critical, right? One person's economic stimulus is another person's deficit spending. So how do we frame is really important. So Jennifer may object on several grounds, right? She may say, one volcano puts out more CO2 than people ever will. Or when the government tried to solve this problem, we ended up with Solyndra. Or we need to worry about real threats today, not a few millimeters of sea level rise in 100 years, right? These are probably all the types of objections that we've heard from friends and family in the past. So how do we respond? It's two options, right? We can either freak out, which is probably what Jennifer's expecting, or we can play it cool, like the Fonz, right? We can just go in and try to mellow it out and say, hey, let's see if we can get through this. So I'm going to offer a couple of ideas as to how to work through this in your mind, right? So first of all, don't take the bait, right? Don't point out where you think Jennifer is wrong, because she might say something that's, you know, that you say, no, that's not correct. She doesn't necessarily want an argument, but she's probably expecting one because, you know, she knows where you're coming from and she knows where she is right now. Listen for values, right? Is her objection really the core issue? Or is there something beneath that that is really bothering her about this, and you have to kind of look for it? Find common ground. First, find something on which to agree. If you can't agree with what she said, maybe you can agree on the underlying value. Then pivot to the solution and try to include Jennifer in it. I think one of the other challenges that we have with some of our conservative messaging is that we often don't include the audience in the solution, right? So is she a Republican? Well, great. Her party has the tools to solve this problem. It's free enterprise, right? If we really believe that a carbon price is going to fix this, then effectively we believe that the marketplace is going to provide those solutions. And her party loves to be the party of free enterprise, so perfect. Does she work in the fossil fuel industry? Even better. Her industry has the science, engineering, and project management know-how to build the low-carbon energy solutions of the future. We can't do it without her. We say, we need you in this process because you and your resources are going to help solve this. So she may object on several grounds, right? These are some of the themes we talked about last week. And we're going to deep dive into a couple of these. So let's first talk about potential objections in the theme of economics, energy, and free markets. Okay. So there's a couple of objections, right? There's the cylinder one we just mentioned. There's one that says, we do much more to protect the environment here at home than in China and India. Regulations are just going to send production to where it's dirtier. Or fracking is leading us into a manufacturing renaissance. The last thing we need is to burden our industries with new costs, right? Now, again, don't take the bait, right? There's some words I've highlighted in red there that, you know, are probably things that a lot of folks might want to jump on and reply to because they have their own take on it. But let's try to look at the values or listen to the values behind what she's saying, right? So in that first one, really what she's saying is she wants a strong economy. And that's something I think we can all agree on. In the cylinder one, she's saying she believes in free markets. She doesn't want the government investing in a company. In the fracking example, she's saying, again, she wants a strong economy, same theme. And what you'll find a lot of the time is that you might have four different objections, which on the surface appear to be very different, but really it's the same underlying message. So how can we respond? So Jennifer's probably expecting us to bemoan capitalism and say it's a failure of capitalism, it's corporate greed. But instead, if we try to include her in a solution, we'll try to give her a solution that really empowers her and empowers her worldview. So let's empower capitalism as the solution. And it can't fix everything, but it can certainly help on this, right? So free enterprise can solve this. The market shouldn't put taxpayers on the hook. We need a strong economy so that we can have a strong environment. We want to hold people and fuels accountable for their decisions. Decarbonizing the economy has a real business case, right? Nuclear, natural gas with sequestration, wind, solar, there's a lot of solutions out there that can make real money for businesses. And there's side benefits too, right? Increased prosperity, clean water, clean air, reduced conflict around the world as we're not shipping oil from different parts of the world. We can also respond, again, she's probably expecting us to bemoan fossil fuels. You know, typically when we talk about climate change, it comes with a negative connotation for fossil fuels. And if you believe in all of the above energy solution, well, then you're probably going to have a negative reaction to that. So she might expect us to talk about divestments or moving away from coal, oil, and gas, or bring up a hot button issue like Keystone or fracking, clean coal. Instead, again, let's make her part of the solution. What if we say that, look, we need the fossil fuel companies that are here today provide a really important service to the economy. Yes, we got to decarbonize, but, you know, today they're really important and they can be part of the solution as they transition over time. So we're for a low carbon, all of the above energy economy, right? Again, if we put a price on carbon, we're not picking winners and losers. We're saying, yes, we can have all the above. It's just going to be slanted toward lower and lower carbon over time. Energy affordability is critically important. That's why we need to be very careful about how we implement our policy. We're not eliminating fossil fuels. We just want to reduce emissions. The government shouldn't pick winners and losers. Instead, put a price on carbon, let the market do the rest. And again, talk about her industry, if she works in that industry, that has all the right people to make this change happen. So here's a sample response, right? So she said, this is that one objection about China and India and jobs and emissions are just going to move over there. So what you could say to this is, I agree, we can't put our economy at risk. That's exactly why our policy proposal includes a border adjustment that will protect American businesses from increasing energy costs and avoiding sending jobs overseas. This is actually similar to President Trump's proposal to make sure our trade deals are fair. The administration's been talking about border adjustment a lot. That's more most have ever heard about border adjustment outside of CCL ever recently. It's kind of interesting. So, you know, this again is kind of reframing her concern, putting a positive spin on it and leading us back toward our policy solutions.
We're going to break out again. Why don't we try to you guys pick an objection. So we'll have the person who is closest to, let's say, Los Angeles this time. We'll go first. So introduce yourself. Tell the other person your name, where you're from. You guys decide who is the closest to Los Angeles. That person will go first. That person can, what you'll do is you can respond to either number one or number two. And then you can see the 4 points on the side where Peter talks about. Remember, you know, don't take the bait. So don't argue with them about Solyndra, or don't argue with them about how fracking is, you know, bad for the water tables. Don't take that bait because that's probably what they're expecting. But understand the underlying value there. What they're really talking about is, you know, they really want a stronger economy, or they don't want government involved with picking winners and losers. So find that common ground with them, because we want those things as well. And then pivot to the solution and include Jennifer in it. Looks like everyone is coming back. Hopefully that was good and successful. It looks like a lot of people are smiling, so that's always good. Did anyone want to share something that they heard from their partner? You don't have to tell us their name, but you thought was particularly useful. And star six, or click the little microphone symbol next to your name or on your screen.
Jessica had talked about a win-win situation, or the, maybe I got it right, the folks down there in the South that talked about win-win situation, and I like that language. I like the idea that it was a win-win between the economy and the climate.
Great. Thank you so much. Appreciate that. All right. So, Peter, are you still with us?
I am. My computer succeeded this time.
All right, great. I'm glad that happened. All right, I will let you pick back up where you left off, my friend.
All right, thanks, everybody. So I hope that was useful. So let's go into another set of potential objections. This has more of the theme of liberty, anti-government spending, patriotism, accountability. There's a little bit of crossover here from the last section, but let's get on with it. So these are some more that we picked up from last week. So here are some more objections that she may say. Renewable energy couldn't succeed without handouts. We've had clean nuclear energy for years, but environmentalists won't let us build anymore. Windmills consume more energy than they put out, and they kill birds. And by the way, that's a real quote that Ricky and I heard, so I didn't make that one up. The UN's climate change agenda is just there to threaten U.S. sovereignty. Now again, listen for values, right? What is she really saying behind the statements? So again, on the sovereignty one, it's government overreach. In this case, it's at the highest level at the UN, superseding our independent sovereignty. On the other one, it's also government overreach, government intervention in markets, right? Governments giving tax breaks to some, but not to others. And you know, her perception is we shouldn't be subsidizing these things. In the windmills one, we picked up on the accountability theme when we responded to this in terms of how, you know, windmills are not held accountable for killing birds, and it just seemed like a sham industry to the person that we were talking to anyway. So again, how can we respond? Well, Jennifer's probably expecting us to talk about, you know, UN involvement being crucial and EPA regulations to control over state sovereignty. These are certainly, you know, if you're a federalist-minded person, you know, these are not very attractive topics. And it's usually what they hear about climate change, right? So instead, why don't we give her, some solutions that might appeal to her? So, say, hey, look, we support liberty and limited government too. American leadership, greatness, opportunity, and competitiveness. If you can bring it back to a theme of patriotism, that should appeal. Limited government control with simple, practical solutions. A market-based approach without regulatory bureaucracy. No free riders, right? We saw this one last week where the concern is, what about China and India, right? We hear that one all the time when we talk with our members of Congress. This is also one I get a lot. What about Al Gore's big mansion and all that hypocrisy? And as we mentioned last week, a common response to that is, hey, as conservatives, we shouldn't tell Al how to live his life. We should say, you can have the biggest house you want. You just have to pay for it. You got to be held accountable for your decision. So, yes to accountability and yes to energy freedom. So simple response. So when Ricky and I met with, it wasn't Jennifer, it was another gentleman we met with, and he came out with basically this statement of windmills consume more energy than they put out and they kill birds. I forget which one of us replied, but we basically came back and said something along the lines of, well, we agree if windmills are killing birds, they should be held accountable. We think all fuels should be held accountable for their costs, creating a level playing field for the consumer, right? This was a tough one to find somewhere to agree, but we were able to kind of pivot from here and again, come back to carbon fee and dividend and why we thought it would align with, in this case, Jennifer's values. So we're going to try yet another breakout. This is the third of four.
All right. So, did anyone hear anything in that they would like to share from the session that they were in? We'll take one person. Again, you can click the little microphone symbol next to your name to unmute yourself, or in the lower left-hand corner, unmute yourself, or press *6 on your phone. Nope. All right, Peter, did you hear anything?
Hi. My partner and I didn't get very far, but she came up with an interesting observation on an argument I generally, don't handle well, which is that this is God's creation. God won't destroy the earth. Certainly wouldn't have the most, the species made in his image and likeness destroy this creation. And, I didn't think about the value that that might be expressed in that as a valuing the, life, valuing the whole ecosystem. And, I have not been very successful in using the scripture about our being stewards and being responsible for the creation in a way that's been particularly effective. But I wasn't speaking to the concern about the whole life ecosystem as seen from someone who doesn't believe it could possibly be destroyed, because it says in Genesis that it would never be destroyed again.
Yeah, that's interesting. And thanks so much for sharing that. And it's funny is, what I find myself doing when I'm practicing to listen for values is to actually just ask more questions, because I'm getting the habit of doing that because I help it. I think, and usually it's just like, oh, well, when someone says something like, in that first objection, we'll say, oh, the UN's climate change agenda is threatening sovereignty, or, renewable energy couldn't succeed with that handout. And I'll just ask them, that's interesting that you say that. Tell me a little bit more about that. Or something that just continues to just, so maybe I can just make sure I've got the right value that I'm trying to understand. And it almost signals in my mind when I say that, oh, that's interesting. Tell me more about that. It's almost what I'm really telling myself is really listen this time. it's almost like I'm resetting myself to listen, because I'm so ready to jump in with what I know to be the answer. So, it's finding out that objection and finding out really, really is important. So I appreciate that feedback. And all right. So Peter, I'm going to turn it back over to you, my friend.
All right. Yeah, actually, I'm glad you brought that particular objection up about, you know, God wouldn't let this happen. That actually was in the longer form of this. I cut that one in the interest of time, but that's a tough one. That's one where I really haven't come up with a great answer, actually. But this is the last section that we're going to look at tonight for responses. It's about really climate change advocacy and science, because oftentimes we hear objections and it jumps right into the science or into the actions of climate scientists or advocates. Things like the leaked ClimateGate email showed that this whole thing was a fraud, or one volcano puts out more CO2 than people do. The science is unsettled. There's no warming in 18 years. And anyway, the Earth was warmer during the medieval warming period. In the 1970s, they talked about global cooling, then it was global warming, now it's climate change, and they blame it for everything, right? So there's a couple of interesting values here as we listen for them. You know, one is certainly uncertainty, right? And of course, there's merchants of doubt and all these other sources that tell us about where that uncertainty came from. You know, there's a thought that it's unfathomable. You know, how could it possibly, how could people possibly impact the atmosphere? It's so big, and, you know, it doesn't seem reasonable. Dishonesty, you know, ClimateGate, it put the idea that climate, you know, we're now attacking the integrity of climate scientists, you know, they're dishonest. And again, another uncertainty argument. But I actually would suggest that behind all of these, even one step deeper, is the same core value, which is that the solution is worse than the problem. I really think in the majority of cases that greater than anything, it's that solution aversion concern, that if I accept that the climate scientists have integrity, if I accept that the science is correct on this, if I accept this, what does it mean for me and my family and my life and my quality of life? Do I have to give up all the great things that I've come to enjoy, like having energy and food and everything available to me everywhere I go all the time in our modern society? So how can we respond? Again, Jennifer is expecting kind of the usual. The problem is really bad. And by the way, it's your fault. Don't be a climate denier. Republicans don't believe in science. The science is settled. 97% of the climate scientists agree. We need radical change and we need it quickly. Give up your car, buy less stuff, reduce your carbon footprint, all of those kind of usual things. And, you know, there's some truth behind a lot of those things, but it's not going to resonate well. So instead, how can we include her in the solution? Again, I mean, some of this is a little bit of a repeat of earlier, but the solution, frankly, is really exciting, right? Why don't we flip it around and make it an exciting thing instead of something to be worried about? And we want her help in solving. You know, one thing I'd recommend is moving away from the term climate denier. I understand it may be applicable, but I would say let's use the term climate dissent or climate skeptic, and talking about people not accepting the science rather than believing in the science, because of course science isn't belief, it's evidence-based. And using the word denier, whether you think it's appropriate or not, it just turns people off. Talk about responsible risk management and taking out a reasonable insurance policy to avoid, you know, we want to avoid the worst potential effects, but we also want to break the bank of doing it, right? We've got to be reasonable about this. And there's a huge, huge opportunity for America to lead. Like somebody was talking before about, I think in Illinois or Indiana, producing wind and selling it to other states. Businesses and entrepreneurs really have an opportunity to innovate our way out of this. And we're going to do it faster and more cost effectively than any bureaucrat in Washington ever could, right? I mean, that'll probably go over well with Jennifer. So, you know, on the ClimateGate emails, she's saying the leaked ClimateGate emails showed that the whole thing was a fraud. And I think a simple sample response could be, you know, it's true. There's always uncertainty about science and about climate change. And the science won't be entirely settled, right? I mean, the fundamentals we know pretty well, but you know, the modeling is always going to have some uncertainty with it. That's true. And maybe there were a few bad actors, you know, let's say that there were, but really the weight of the evidence presents a risk. And, you know, we're proposing to take out an insurance policy to act on that risk, to stave off the worst potential effects without breaking the bank. Basically, if, you know, those who would sow doubt about climate science want to play in the arena of doubt, we can play in the arena of doubt. That's what risk management is. So, okay, so you've done your best answering Jennifer's objections, and you know, and now she's kind of interested to learn more, right? She says, okay, maybe this person shares my worldview. I'm intrigued to hear more, and you know, if it's important to you, maybe it should be more important to me. Maybe you're onto something here. And I mean, she's still smiling, which is a good thing, right? So that's good. So to wrap this up, what I want to just look at is, how do we show our conservative street cred for CCL and carbon fee and dividend? And let's start name dropping. Let's be honest with ourselves that we actually have a lot of people on our side supporting what we're doing. So first of all, we want to show Jennifer that we're not, a progressive in disguise trying to influence her or change her. But instead, we're really just trying to bring her something that fits with her worldview. So first, to build the integrity of CCL, right, we want to say, of course, we're a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization. We don't have any hidden agenda. We're really just here to solve this problem. We don't demonize anybody. We approach everybody with respect and appreciation. We're working with all members of Congress, left and right, across the country on this issue. We're solution-focused, before things, not against them. And in particular, interest to Jennifer is that we're seeking Republican introduction of the bill. We want your representatives, the people that represent you, to help lead us on this. We need their help. We're not trying to shame them. We're trying to work with them. Tell them about the Gibson resolution with all the Republican sign-ons and the Climate Solutions Caucus and the successes there. Tell them about our conservative caucus. And in fact, if you find somebody, feel free to put them in touch with our conservative caucus if they are interested in getting involved in CCL, but they're not really sure if this is the organization for them. This is basically a caucus of Republican and conservative CCL volunteers all around the country. And we're also an ally of something called the Conservative Energy Network, which is organizations that are conservative-leaning and working on clean energy solutions. You can send them to the landing page on citizensclimatelobby.org. So it's citizensclimatelobby.org/conservatives. And this is our public page of the Conservative Caucus, and people can sign up there as well. As the Conservative Caucus, there's a couple action teams within CCL that are working with a lot of organizations that are really trusted by conservatives. The Conservative Caucus, Business Climate Leaders Team, Team Oil, and chapters all across the country are working with local chambers of commerce. But all these organizations that are on the screen and more we've talked to, we've engaged. I don't want to pretend like, any of them are, some of them have different views on our policy, but we're working with them in a respectful way and working toward common ground. We also have something new called the Ambassador Program, where conservative caucus members around the country are starting to work directly with local Republican clubs. We're trying to influence Republican Party platforms all over the country. We're hosting conservative speakers to come to different parts of the country, and we welcome in new conservative volunteers as well. Don't forget our advisory board, of course. It's a pretty large group of people with mixed views, but there are some folks on the conservative side on our advisory board for sure. Of course, everybody knows George Shultz, Congressman Bob Inglis, Dr. Catherine Hayhoe, who's an evangelical Christian and climate scientist down here in Texas, and Admiral David Titley from the military. And then as far as CF&D, our policy proposal, there are many folks out there, leaders, thought leaders from the business space, from conservative think tanks, economists, people who write, business writers and things like that, folks like that, who all carry a lot of credentials on the conservative side that support either our policy or something like it. You may not know who all these folks on the screen are, but that's okay, because you can also go to our National Climate Voices document. You can search for this on CCL Community. It's available on the endorser program page. And it actually highlights some of the biggest, most impressive voices that are out there calling for different climate solutions. And there's a whole section on conservative thought leaders on the backside of the sheet, which has a lot of everybody who is listed on the former slide. Finally, to wrap up on CCL Community, there's some tools at your disposal. We have the conservative outreach page where a lot of the things I just showed are available. If you navigate to the resources tab and then go to outreach resources and then scroll down to conservative outreach, or you can just search for the word conservative on community and it should pop up. And there's a lot of stuff there. There are flyers that you can take out to events. So if you're going to go to a tabling event and you want to you know, make sure that conservatives who walk by your table might stop by. You can put these flyers out, and hopefully it'll help explain the fee and dividend from a conservative perspective. And also, if you haven't yet, you might want to join the CCL Conservative Caucus Forum. This is really, it's really open to everybody in CCL. You can questions if you have them, or, you know, if you have a, if you need help on something for outreach activity, feel free to join there and get more involved.